Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
A few days ago, Thursday, I think, what was that, 3 days ago, I guess, I found myself doing something that I don't usually do. This is confession time. I was raised Catholic. You know, they don't call it confession anymore. They call it reconciliation, I think. I liked it better when I could spell it. I found myself wishing a few days ago, just for a few minutes during the afternoon, that the holidays were over, which is really, really kind of sad because I love the holidays, but for some reason a few days ago, things started getting to me. My wife was going to be going out of town. She leaves tomorrow, I think, to go to California to be with her family, and I'm driving down Thursday to Florida, so we will be on opposite coasts on Christmas Day. I couldn't get anything done. I couldn't find any presents I wanted. The construction and the road closings and everything and the traffic were making me absolutely crazy. And I was feeling pressured to do things because I felt obligated to do them. And I really, really hate that. As a result, instead of seeing Christmas as sort of a celebration, as a wonderful opportunity to go to parties and give presents and get presents and spend time with friends, I started seeing Christmas as a deadline. Okay, I had to get everything done. I had presents to buy, holiday events to go to, people to see, all that stuff. And I didn't have enough time left, at least I felt that way, to do it all. Now, fortunately, because I've been in this teaching for a lot of years, that feeling didn't last too long because I don't like to stay in that state of mind, especially during a season that's supposed to be for peace, love, and joy. And when I say peace, I'm not just talking about peace on earth, but I'm talking about peace of mind, which is more important. Not only love for all people everywhere in a very vague sense, but love for my own life and the people that are in it. I got some pretty wonderful people in my life. And not only joy for what might happen if everything goes right or what I want to happen, but a feeling of joy about what is happening every single moment. And that requires us to be focused on the here and now, being focused on the present. So I decided that it was time for me to work on my Christmas presents. Not the wrapping kind, my Christmas present. In other words, it was time for me to stop worrying about what I hadn't done yet and about all the things I was obligated to do and all the places that I was going to have to be and to simply be present. Not just physically, I'm talking mentally, emotionally, and spiritually in the here and now, which meant appreciating whomever I was with, enjoying whatever I was doing at the moment, and allowing myself to be at peace no matter what needed to get done. So that's what I started focusing on. The funny thing was, the moment, I mean within 15 minutes of when I started focusing on that, everything started flowing perfectly. Absolutely perfect. Traffic started moving. I found all the presents I needed, all of them. I found the time to get a few cards and emails sent to people. And I started being more happy and excited about all the wonderful things that were happening. I started enjoying Christmas instead of fighting it, My wife and I put up a Christmas tree, which we haven't done in 3 years because we were going to be out of town. We figured we could enjoy it the rest of the month, even though we weren't going to be here for Christmas. I could enjoy the lights and the Christmas decorations in all the stores and in all my neighbors' yards. They decorate them. I could even listen to Christmas music, which sometimes gets to me when it starts at Thanksgiving. You know, I get tired of it. And I could sing. I changed one of the Sirius channels on my Prius there, so it was playing nothing but Christmas music, and I've been playing that all week. It's kind of like I've been singing with it, like Karaoke Taxi. Have you seen that show? You know, the Lady Gaga version kind of thing. So, and this is the most important one. I could stop being irritated by all of the commercialism and all of the religious symbolism that people tried to push on me. I began to experience and to appreciate the world, my part of it anyway, as it is. Now, it's also kind of interesting how getting myself, with a little S here, back into the present moment affected the way that I was experiencing joy. Now, it may sound a little funny, but I could actually feel joy coming, not from the outside or just from the outside, but also from the inside, coming from both directions. And I was more excited about everything that I did, and exciting things started happening around me. The people around me started doing exciting things. I remember I showed up an hour early for the practitioner luncheon we had a week or so ago at Davio's at Phipps. And I showed up at 10 o'clock and nobody was there. And I called and found out it was at 11. But instead of being irritated by that, there was this choir of kids that was forming up. And I sat there and listened to these kids singing Christmas music in the main center there of Phipps Plaza. And it was echoing and people were looking down. And I was absolutely mesmerized. Absolutely loved it. Okay? And it all reminded me, this is kind of the point of all this, for the first time in years, how excited I was about Christmas when I was a kid. Very, very different from how I was looking at it now. As a matter of fact, as I think back on it, I think Santa Claus was one of my earliest higher powers. Okay? Sort of after my parents, but before I started thinking about God, Santa Claus was kind of sandwiched in there. In fact, in a lot of ways, when I was a kid, my relationship to Santa Claus was very, very similar to my relationship with God. Very, very similar. For example, I was a little bit afraid of him. You know, because I'd never seen him in person. I'd seen impersonators, but not the real guy. And I really didn't like the idea that he was watching me all the time, okay? Making a list, checking it twice. That puts a lot of pressure on a kid, okay? Especially one like me who was often unjustly accused of being obnoxious, you know? Hard to believe. So even though I was excited on Christmas Eve, I was also a little bit nervous because I wasn't sure how things were going to turn out the next day. I wasn't sure what list I was on, you know, the naughty one or the nice one. And I began thinking maybe there's some in-between lists, you know, not quite naughty, almost nice. You know, so maybe there's four lists and I can make one of the ones in the middle. All right. But the next morning, all right, all the fear went away because I went out and there were presents and the family was laughing and we were all sort of getting along with each other, which was very, very nice. And that was probably one of my first big lessons on how cause and effect worked. If you were good or good enough, then you get stuff. That was kind of a thing that was in my mind. Now, I read somewhere, this was years ago, that there are three stages in our life as far as Christmas is concerned. Okay? In the first stage, we believe in Santa Claus. In the second stage, we don't believe in Santa Claus. And in the third stage, we are Santa Claus. Okay, that's the three. And I thought that was pretty clever because that's kind of the way that my relationship with God has evolved. I mean, in the first stage of my life, I believed in God, or maybe a better way of saying it is, I believed what I had been told about God. You know, I listened to the priest and the nuns and my parents and all that. I thought I knew what God wanted me to do and what God didn't want me to do. So being a good Catholic boy, I followed the rules. And I tried to be good, not because being good was the right thing to do, I tried to be good so I could get rewarded and not get punished. That was my motivation. And there were times when I tried all sorts of things to get God to do what I wanted him, because it was a him I was told, to do. So when I prayed, I begged, I bargained, I made promises, I did whatever it took. And I did that for a lot of years, that kind of praying, which I have found out since is not really prayer, until I finally decided that it wasn't working. That it wasn't working. It didn't seem to be doing for me in my life what I wanted it to do. But what I didn't realize at the time that I have learned since is that it actually was working. I just didn't know how it worked. I just didn't know how it worked. It's sort of, life was giving me what I thought I deserved, which apparently wasn't very much. So I guess you could say I was asking God for what I didn't want, and that's what I was getting. Very, very interesting. But so eventually, totally confused and disillusioned, my life moved into stage two, probably right after college or while I was in college. I did what most of us do at that age. I gave up on God. Now, I didn't exactly give up believing in God, but I did give up believing there was anything I could do to change God's mind. I figured he was going to do what he was going to do, and I needed to do what I needed to do. Sort of like a teenager who doesn't believe in Santa Claus anymore, okay? When you stop believing there's any connection between your behavior and what you get for Christmas, like you feel when you're a kid. So as far as my relationship to God was concerned, I just lived my life the only way I know how, which is sort of a trial and error. I didn't think any special stuff about God. I didn't think of myself in any special way because I didn't seem to think it made any difference. I simply reacted to whatever happened to me, okay, sometimes intelligently, frequently not. And what I ended up with at that point was a fairly average life. Sort of average job, average relationship, that kind of stuff. Not all that bad, but not all that great either. That's what that got me. So finally, after years of that, I reached stage 3. And that's the stage where I became Santa Claus, so to speak. Now, I knew I wasn't Santa Claus, but I figured out that I am the way the principle of Santa Claus shows up in the world. Because what Santa gives, he can only give through you and through me, okay? Not through the sleigh, with the sleigh, not down the chimney. I lived in Florida. We didn't have chimneys, okay? So all that stuff was where it was. Now, spiritually, the same thing is true about God. Dr. Holmes says it this way. He says, we are not all of God, but all we are is God, which is a really great statement. In other words, just like Santa Claus, we are the principle of God, the creative intelligence, the power of love, expressing itself in the world. We are the way God works in the world. Now, that doesn't just happen in stage 3. It was true in stage 1 and 2. We just didn't realize it at the time. And it's a very magical moment when we finally realize that who and what we are, you, me, everybody in the world, is God showing up in the world as everybody in it. Now, bear with me here. If we combine the Santa image and the God image and apply it to ourselves, we take it there, we can see that what we are is actually God giving the endless gift of God to itself. And not just at Christmas, all the time. That's why this image that we have created of this jolly old man in a beard running around giving gifts to every child in the world, that's why it's so appealing. First, because it's a much greater idea than what we see going on in a lot of places right now. And second, because we know on some level, you know, at the deepest, most profound spiritual level that we have, that this is possible. It's actually possible. Not Santa Claus bringing things to every child or person in the world, but all of us giving the gift of love and peace and all the things that Peter named in his song to one another. In fact, that's the way we ought to be living all the time. I mean, it wouldn't be a bad thing if we all started acting a lot more like Santa Claus. Really, okay? And something inside of us knows this, because we are all capable of giving more than we give now. We are all capable of doing things that transform not just our life, but transform the world, okay? We are all able to heal. We're all able to prosper. We're able to create at a much higher level than we're doing now. That's why it's wonderful that so much of the world focuses their spiritual energy during this time of year on beliefs that support this idea of peace on earth and goodwill towards men and women. Angela, thank you. Because that's a very powerful and very joyful idea. That's why all of the different religious celebrations of this season, besides Christmas, like Hanukkah, which starts Christmas Eve, so Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and Christmas are all at the same time this year, or the Muslim Feast of Sacrifice, or the Buddhist Day of Enlightenment, all of which happen around this time of year, all of these are based on joyful stories. They're based on joyful stories. The Christmas story is just one really beautiful example, but it's one I want to talk about in a few minutes because all of us are familiar with it. Now, the major issue, challenge with the Christmas story that I see, all right, is that most traditional religions, the Christian religions, only focus on one small part of it. They only focus on Christmas Day, on the birth of the Christ child in the manger and the wise men bearing gifts and the shepherds with their flocks and all that kind of stuff. Choirs of angels overhead. I went to my 10-year-old great-niece's school play up at Sugar Hill Christian Academy the other night, and it was all the kindergarten through fifth grade kids. And the whole story that these 250 children had been working to do was based on that one single event. They had angels, they had wise men, you know, nothing like a little kid dressed up with a beard. It was really, really cute. You know, they had camels walking with two kids inside a costume. I mean, it was all really cute. Not because of any other reason than that symbology has taken over what they believe. You see, it's pretty obvious, though some people don't like it, is that Christmas is not a historically documented event. I mean, no photographers, no Snapchat, none of that stuff there at the time. In fact, there is nothing historical written anywhere in any history outside of the Bible, which is a sort of a biased publication, you might think. But even though that's true, none of it really matters, because the story itself is a metaphor. This story, the Christmas story, is a perfect metaphorical presentation showing us the power of the creative process. So it's not just about the birth of a child. It's about the birth of an idea with the potential to change the world expressed in physical form. And that's what every newborn child is. That was Angela's granddaughter who was up here, just went out. So that's why she was smiling so much. Isn't that cute? In fact, that's what every single one of us is. Every adolescent, teenager, grown-up, every one of us, we are an idea in physical form, and inside us is the power to change the world. Every single one of us. But if we only focus on that one day in the Christmas story, on the celebration of when the baby was born, we miss the most important part. So I'm going to talk for a few minutes about the story and relate it to some other stories because it's very important to our understanding. You see, the Christmas story actually begins about 9 months earlier, before Christmas Day, at least according to the Gospel of Luke, as we are told, with the appearance of an angel to a young woman, a young maid, telling her that she was going to be given the opportunity to give birth to a child who was going to change the world. Now, the angel supposedly said, fulfill the law, but that's changing the world, the same thing. Now, as soon as some people hear this, they immediately start asking questions like the existence of angels and virgin birth. But there's no reason to get bogged down in those kind of details because there's an important message in what's happening. You see, an angel, when we read these stories about angels or any kind of spiritual being, whether it's a genie or a spirit animal or whatever, in whatever spiritual tradition you're talking about, is a symbol of a greater idea. That's what an angel symbolizes. It's a symbol of our ability to consciously, constantly communicate with spirit and the fact that spirit is constantly communicating with us. So they represent our connection to that power. So instead of being the messenger, angels are the message. They're the message themselves. I mean, the truth is, spiritual understanding always comes to us in the form not of an outside messenger, but of an inside message, as something in our consciousness awakens. And you know that feeling, but something in our consciousness awakens just like the consciousness of a child awakens in the womb. At some point, a bunch of cells becomes a conscious being. It's an amazing, miraculous transformation. And every creative idea comes to us in the same way, speaking to us at our own personal level of mental and spiritual awareness, whatever that happens to be at the time. And what it reveals to us, the message that it brings, is always potentially greater than anything that's going on outside of us. That's why it's important for us to have a spiritual practice so we can learn how to listen. Not listen to what's out there, listen to what is in here. And this source of wisdom that we learn to listen for is available to us all the time. It's almost like the thing when a child, you were told you had a guardian angel. Well, we do. The guardian angel is our inner wisdom, this message that we are always able to hear, and it's there whenever we need it. But we're only going to be able to hear what it's telling us and to act on it and to bring that idea in here forth into our life if we are open to a new idea, and a lot of people are not open to new ideas, and if we are willing to nurture that idea and care for it the same way a mother would care for a newborn child. Now, as for the young woman being a virgin, I always loved that part. When I was a little cynical about it early on when I was in my anti-religion phase. But it's actually a very normal concept in a lot of different spiritual stories once you start getting into reading the diversity of it. If you start listing the beings, these heroic beings or spiritual beings like the Buddha or Krishna in Hinduism, or Zoroaster, or Horus in Egyptian, Adonis, Mithra. I could go through the whole list of people you've probably never heard of. Every single one of these people were said to be born the same way, exactly the same way. A woman became with child through some sort of divine intervention, either in a dream or some sort of a god or power coming down to earth. And these stories are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years prior to what we call the Christmas story, all right? Which is, once again, not that important. But what is important is that every single one of these stories had a sequence. And they all had the identical sequence, all right? And the fact that all these stories told in the same sequence and gave the same message shows that this is a universal idea that we all need to get, no matter what our religion happens to be. So here's the sequence in the stories. In every one of these stories, first a messenger appears to a woman, a god, an angel, whatever it is. Secondly, the woman is afraid, which is perfectly understandable. Third, the message is delivered. Fourth, the woman objects, saying, I'm not worthy, every one of the stories. And finally, the messenger gives some sort of a sign that this needs to be done and everything's going to be fine. And once the mother agrees, the natural process begins. And this special being, eventually, 9 months later, is born into the world as a newborn child. Now, if you think about it, this is exactly the way every new idea, large or small, comes into our life. There's a messenger which comes to us in the form of an idea or a thought that presents it to ourselves. It could be something that is brand new. It could be something that we've become very familiar with. But something in our consciousness becomes aware of an idea. Could be a new business, could be a new relationship, could be almost anything. And the first time that comes to us, are we excited? No, we're usually afraid. And we're afraid because we might have to make some difficult decisions. We might have to risk some things. We might have to change our whole life around. We might have to do things we've never done before. But that idea, if it's a good one, then takes hold. It takes hold inside of us and it starts to grow. Now, when it does, a couple of things happen. First, we start to think about more and more ways it could work, that we could actually make it happen. And secondly, this is the important one, we become more and more uncomfortable with our old life and our old way of being. We start to think here, and we can feel ourselves being pulled. Now, the funny thing is, even when we start to see the possibilities of maybe this could happen, we still have all these voices yammering, voices outside, but especially voices inside. And what these voices are telling us is, don't do it. It's too dangerous. It may not work. Stay where it's safe and familiar. Don't go there. Don't go there. But finally, we reach a point. We reach a tipping point, and that's a very spiritual point in our consciousness, where we make the decision to go ahead. And once we make that decision, once we completely accept the idea, the law of mind takes over. The law of mind takes over, and the birth process of that idea into a thing begins. In other words, we allow the creative process to be set in motion through us, and a perfectly natural sequence unfolds that eventually makes our idea a reality in our life. That's what the whole Christmas story is talking about. All right, so we can turn any season of our life into a season of joy or bring into it. All we have to do is bring into it something that rejuvenates us. No matter what circumstances we're in, we can bring love to the situation. We can bring health to the situation. We can bring happiness, abundance. We can bring healing. And we got a lot of healing to do in the world. And we can create any of those things from within us. Nothing outside of us, no circumstances, this is a symbolism of the story, can stop a greater idea from being born through us if we're open to it, whether it seems logical or not, if we nurture it, if we protect it from fear and false ideas, and if we follow the message of our inner wisdom, trusting and believing what it's telling us. And if we do all of these things consciously and faithfully, we will continue to conceive all sorts of new and creative, wonderful ideas again and again and again in every season. That's all that this story is telling us. And it really is a message of great joy, which is why that word applies so much. So, over the next week or so, many of you are going home. You're going to spend time with people who have beliefs and ideas that are different from yours. That's a wonderful thing. Be grateful for it, okay? You don't have to challenge anybody. You don't have to argue with anybody about religion or politics or any of that other stuff. All you need to do is to be present and enjoy the joy of this season. I'm going to be home, and that's certainly what I plan to do. So on behalf of all the people in this center, who make it such a wonderful place for all of us to come on behalf of the board and the practitioners and the ministerial staff and our youth people and our fabulous volunteers. I want to wish for every one of you a safe, healthy, happy, and conscious Christmas and a very, very joyful, healthy, and abundant New Year, because it's wonderful, and so are you. And so it is. And so am I. All right, thank you. All right, let's take a moment. As I open my mind to Spirit, to God, to life, life opens itself to me. I know that there is a power inside me, and I live and have my being inside of it. There is oneness not just with me and God, but with all things. The universe, life, spirit, all these things are one. So I recognize that all the stories, all the many spiritual stories, all the mythology, all the wisdom and the folly of human history is all caught up in ideas. And these ideas are presented to me in a great multitude of ways, and it's up to me to be open to them, to be open to a greater idea, not just around me, but within me. I begin to feel within me the presence of a power, of a life force that is creative and loving and kind and respectful and accepting towards all people, towards all beliefs. I share what I believe with others, not to argue with them, but to find the common ground. In this season, we open ourselves to that common ground. There is joy in many stories. There is peace in many different stories. All of this comes from the spirit that is in each and every one of us, no matter what our religion, our race, our nationality, or anything else. So as we all begin, right where we are, whatever state of mind we're in, to open ourselves to peace in the world, we begin to meet others to whom peace is important. And we join together our consciousness, and people of peace expand into larger and larger groups, and in that way we transform the world. So we give no power to the war and the hatred and the anger that seems to be raging. We do not support it. We do not give it power. Instead, we focus on the power of love as the greatest power in all of life. Knowing this, we give thanks. We give thanks for all that we have been given and all that we have yet to give. We give thanks for the opportunity to share this wonderful gift of life with so many people. And knowing this, we accept this as the greater truth. This is the invisible idea that takes form in our consciousness and is born into the world as peace. We accept it. We release it. Please join me in saying, and so it is.